Ernest, what's up? Look, if creating content is more than just a passion project for you, it's time to make the passion profitable. With Kajabi, you can easily diversify your revenue, build your brand, and transform your audience into loyal customers. I know firsthand how challenging it can be to juggle content creation and business development, but Kajabi makes it easy to streamline everything in one place. As a creator, you are your brand, so your business should reflect exactly what you envision. With Kajabi, not only can you build your business your way, but you can also keep every cent of what you earn. It's an all-in-one platform that lets you focus on what matters most, your content and your audience. And let's face it, we all need a little help sometimes, especially when you're a one-person show. But you don't need to hire a full-time team. You just need Kajabi. Kajabi is a leading all-in-one platform that helps creators and entrepreneurs build successful online businesses by unlocking predictable, recurring revenue. Whether you're a coach, content creator, or educator, Kajabi makes it easy to transform your skills, passions, and experiences into enriching online courses, exclusive membership sites, subscription podcasts, and more. The best part? Kajabi doesn't take a cut of your revenue. Everything you create is owned and controlled by you, so you keep 100% of what you earn. On top of that, Kajabi gives you robust analytics, easy payment options, email marketing tools, and customizable website templates, everything you need to grow your business seamlessly. And here's the thing, you don't need a massive audience to make sustainable income. Thousands of creators are making six and seven figures with Kajabi, even with less than 50,000 followers. So if you're navigating the challenges of generating revenue as a creator, Kajabi can be the game changer you need. Right now, Kajabi is offering an incredible deal, a free 30-day trial to help you kickstart your business. Just head over to kajabi.com/earn to get started. That's kajabi.com/earn. Join the creators and entrepreneurs who've made over $7 billion on their platforms and take control of your financial future with Kajabi today. Kajabi.com/earn. Don't miss out on this opportunity to turn your passion into profit. Earners, what's up? Y'all know the adage, buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise flagship fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise flagship fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/earn. That's fundrise.com/earn. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise flagship fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
I need everybody to get on your feet.
Yeah, this is that moment. Like, this is that moment when we light this shit up.
The 10 people that's not on their feet. I need everybody to get on your feet. And we about to bring out one of the greatest entrepreneurs, one of the greatest living icons of our culture.
Yeah.
Curtis 50 Cent Jackson.
Yes, yes. They said it was not so.
Yeah.
This is so exciting. I felt like I was supposed to perform.
So, Fifth, man, y'all can take y'all seats now. Y'all can take y'all seats now. Before we start, how does this feel, right? Just to actually see over, this is a room of 10, 12,000 black people that's here to empower themselves, learn about entrepreneurship. How does this feel to actually see this?
This is amazing. Just to see so many people here within the entrepreneur spirit, you know, that there's, I have a disease, right? It's called ambition. I contracted it from not having. All right, and I'm just gonna always be going through an endless tunnel because I'll accomplish something and then I want to do something different. My idea will change or something. Now my ideas are getting so big that it's changing even how I, like how I can deliver things. I have to be conscious of what I'm saying or what I'm doing because the idea is it's going to disrupt my idea. Like a lot of the music If you listen to the music that's out right now, I have to tap into my stupid. I have to tap into the stupid side of me to write the right thing when it comes time to write the music. So sometimes, this is why I haven't created as much content as I was creating in the past, and I started going towards the film production and development of these projects, because I think I can impact things in a bigger way through that. You know, like, Tyler's been there all by himself.
Tyler disrupted.
Yeah. I have, I know people don't see it, but he invited me out to come to his studios to show me his operation, everything he had going on. And it's amazing. I think, he inspired me. Mm-hmm. He inspired me. I had the idea and already was going in that direction, but when you can see the layout already, I can prevent myself from making mistakes by not making the mistakes he's made. Because, you know, having him around to communicate with him is allowing me the ability to have information I wouldn't have privy to. You know, so it's cool. He texted me right before I got here, asked me when I would be back in Atlanta. And following this, I'll go to California, so I catch up with him after.
Yeah, that means mentorship is important. Yeah. People, obviously, we know you from your music career, legendary Get Rich or Die Trying. We heard the music, aggressive in nature, right? But Curtis Jackson, right, the businessman, are some of the same characteristics that you translate as the artist, do they carry over to you as the business icon that you became? Do you need to be aggressive? Do you need to be stern? Like, what are some of those things that transfer?
I think when you have, when you're aggressive, that you have if people ever had even a little bit of fear of you, you got a second career at making them laugh. You know, so you watch guys like Mike Tyson, like Iron Mike, and then you see him in Hangover, or you see him in a comedy film, and it connects because they go, look, he was great. I met Mike, he was great. He didn't even bite my fucking ear. You know, like it was like, because they expect the worst from you. Then when they have an experience, and the experience would be a pure normalcy, or did it feel like a lot more at that point? And for me, the aggression, when I end up in a business setting, it's a lot easier to deal with me. I do struggle with one thing, right? I do struggle with growing up in a different environment. Like sometimes I deal with attorneys, and a lot of times I'm dealing with attorneys, right? I've spent over $21 million in legal fees. Since you see me, I spend $1 million a year in legal fees now. As I have general counsel, I have people that are just around. But the more that they talk about you being a billionaire, the more you better put your ass in the house. Are you finna get sued? They trip over some shit. Oh, 50, why'd you do that on purpose? What the fuck did I do? Nah, it's a little different. Like, you know, I watched like having opportunities at different points, because I start off first is the music. It connects, it works, and it allows me the popularity and the ability to financially invest in different things, right? And I'm gonna bet on the things that I know I can influence myself. I know if I know the momentum in the music was there, so I was betting on new artists and developing the artist's career. And then sometimes they couldn't come up with the right stuff, so I was writing it for them, because I could do it myself, like, at that point. But then I started wanting to do different things, and I went with to the film projects early. I did the biggest straight-to-DVD movie deal ever. I thought I was making movies because we're going to put them in the theater. And they was just going straight to DVD. But there was straight to DVD, now it's straight to streaming. So it's straight to your Netflix, it's straight to your Hulu, it's straight to your, you know, like when Will did the movie directly with Netflix, it changed how people perceive those projects.
Monster film.
Yep, it's the monster film. And there's I watched it, and because there used to be a clear line between television and film production, and actors that were successful on TV the film actors wouldn't go near them. Like, they would stay away from it because they felt like it was a higher grade of quality, that they wanted to stay more cachet to you being a movie star than you being a television star. But now we're producing premium projects that allow you see Forest Whitaker and Godfather Harlem. You see Academy Award winning actors choosing television because it builds a consistency and they can pay out the money that would keep the talent happy but staying there. Like, but you do need to know with Power, everybody told me no. I pitched that show to all of the networks and they were like, no. And I wanted to make the project so bad that I went and I recorded 8 songs. Because the last place they spend money in television production is music. And it's just the last, the director will put together his dream sequence of music that's under it. And you watch his version of it. And then the music supervisor will come in and change it to something that feels the same, that doesn't cost anything. And, you know, if it wouldn't sell on iTunes, I really don't, I don't want the shit in my project. That's why I made the theme music for the projects, because I said it has to be good enough to for them to feel something when it comes on. Yep. Like I felt when, you know, we had television shows like Good Times. When that came on, you felt something. Good Times. Temporary layoff.
I'm thinking about it. It's pretty powerful, right? Because we come from an era where, like, even now, you go into a club and they might be playing the Fresh Prince theme song.
Yeah.
But now I'm watching you perform the Power theme song. Talk about the intentionality of defying the no, right? Because you could have just said, all right, well, maybe this is not for me, right? You had some success in film, but television wasn't that.
Yeah.
Talk about the defying the odds and say, all right, I'm going to film this thing anyway for Power.
When they're telling me no, I'm like, why do you keep telling me no? Like, I want to do it. Like, cause like music is like, we can make it at home. We can go get a track from YouTube, the producer, record it on your laptop, put it on iTunes, it's on YouTube, and it can go. Like the film projects, there was a resistance that I wasn't accustomed to feeling that. Like, and when I came back with the music and we pitched it and I was playing and I was talking to Chris Albert, because at the time, with Chris, I always recognize him because he's an innovative thinker. He's one of those guys that could see it. Like he gave me the green light on the project, right? And I was getting $17,000 to play a reoccurring character, the Kanan character, to be the executive producer and damn near be the music supervisor for the project, and they wouldn't accept the cast of Power for 3 seasons. Good Morning America, like I was at the nightclub last night, and they'd be like, yo, if he doesn't come, we don't even want to. I just came from the nightclub. It's like, Good Morning America is like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. So I was like, all right, just give me a suit. Put the suit on. I was a little agitated. If you look back at those interviews, I didn't want to answer those questions. I'm like, bro, why am I doing this? Like, they pay me more to go to the nightclub just to just go. All right, so I just wanted to do it, and then I kind of got them pregnant with the idea. You see what it turned into. It turned into 4 shows in the universe that it's been number one in African American and Latino household for 10 years.
So speaking of your empire that you built, you have recently Shreveport, Louisiana, right? Talk about why Shreveport and what exactly you're doing in Shreveport. And somebody from Shreveport in the back, Shreveport's in the house?
Hey, no more ratchet in my city. They call Shreveport, got a nickname, they call it Ratchet City. I don't like the idea of that. I want to change that. But look, when I get to Shreveport, it was the Tax Incentive. And funny enough, I have a relationship with Avi Lerner, and he owned Millennium Studios. That was the previous studio that was in Shreveport. So he there, and he also owns a studio in Bulgaria that I shot the last Expendables with Stallone, Jason Statham, Megan Fox, and Dolph Lundgren out there with him. And I kind of got my, when I was telling you guys about my business model for film, kind of came through him. Like, I would think that the project will be as good as what we put on paper. And if we bring the right passionate group of talent together to portray those characters, that it'll be something that's really exciting at the end of it. But they look at a feature film like, because you got to make the bulk of the money back in 3 weekends, you got a minute and 30 seconds to make people say, I want to see that. And this is why it's a small group of people that consistently sell the feature film. Like, we see Denzel Washington, we go, yeah, I think I'm going to check that one out. And they could keep them they got to pick projects that consistently are good. So if it's Stallone and it's on genre, it's an action film, they know how much they could get for it in each one of the territories, and they're selling it on a poster before you can even look at the frame of film. So I'm like, that's not what I thought it was, like how it works. And then I kind of got a clearer understanding from that experience. And then you learn from mistakes. I was working with the wrong people early on in Rand Limit. I got him from Avi's crew. Yeah, he was the wrong guy, so he found out about me later. Yeah.
So what, you know, we were talking backstage with SH, and one of the things that you both have in common is that you've been able to navigate different networks kind of seamlessly, right? You had a show on ABC.
Yeah.
You were on Stars, you were streaming on Peacock. Tell us about the leverage of using the platforms to your advantage, and what's the plan? Like, how do you pick them, right? When do you decide that this is the perfect partner on Netflix to now say, I want to stream or put programming on?
The relationships, like, you pitch the projects to the same group of people. So you may get a chance to pitch through the top networks, whether it's Netflix, Hulu, Peacock, or these different people. And because I had an overall deal, Stars had to tell me no before I could go out to go sell the show.
Like a first right of refusal.
Yeah, it's a first right of refusal. And because of that, I'm the easiest person to say no to. They told me no, I sold it to ABC. They told me no, I sold it to Peacock. Told me no, they sold it over here. They did that until I accumulated, like, I currently have 34 shows across 10 different networks. And I was saying the same thing that they said to me when I was trying to pitch Power. Why do you keep telling me no? You're telling me no. I'm like, it doesn't mean I'm not going to do it. It just means, okay, you're not the right person to have success with me at the present moment. These people will have success with me. And I learned, you know, I've seen some people fail upward. Like, you go, damn, how the hell did you get into a CEO position? You stupid motherfucker. Like, you know, they think the job is to say no, to hold on to the money, to not spend it. Even when it's the right opportunity or it's the right project, it's the right situation. And I look at it and I go, I simplify things. If I have a hit, I just want more of the hit. Like, when they ask me, they say, well, you did great. So what do you want to do next? And I'm like, more of what I just did. Like,
yeah. For example.
Yeah, like, it was my film and television career is mirroring what my music career was. My first album is the largest debut in hip-hop album. It sold 13 million records, Get Rich or Die Trying.
Absolute classic. Nah, we need more noise for Get Rich or Die Trying. Y'all gotta stop playing. God damn, all right.
And then the first television show is the highest rated show on that particular network. So it makes, gives you the cachet that kind of allowed me a little more leverage with the things. What'd you say? What'd you say? Man, I don't even like them. I'm gonna tell you the truth, right? Because me and you are having this personal conversation right now. I really don't like these people, right? But it's not about me liking them or them liking me. It's about what's good for business, right? So they go, you think they like that? Like when I say things online, I say, yo, it look like all, they all went to school on a small yellow bus. I say some wild shit to them people, man. Like they look and go, what you say? Get his phone. Before he says some more shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but this is one of those things where I don't want to make the other executives afraid to work with me. Right? But that particular person, because they look, I think one of the unwritten laws of businesses appear not to need anything. Because everybody will do you a favor when you don't need one. If they can expect a bigger favor in return or a favor from you at some later point, they'll find the ability to just do it. Here, man. No problem. That's why when they tell me no, I go, the television said they on strike. I say, okay, I'm on tour. All right. That last tour I did, what, 103 shows? Yep. It's the third highest grossing hip hop tour.
Ever. Keyword ever.
And I decided to go because they was on strike. So I'm like, yo, no new album, no nothing. I'm ready.
But that's why you did the tour, because there was a writer's strike.
Yeah, because of the writer's strike and the television. I'm like, I'm going on tour. And they're going, I'm like, you too going still on tour. Tell me I need a new record. These motherfuckers ain't put a record out in 100 years. And then it worked out, like, you know. And my audience, I like to say this, my core audience was in college during 2003, right?
Yes, they here right now.
Yeah. And I love you. If you just made noise, I love you, because without you, I wouldn't be successful. See, that core, that noise that you heard from 03, their social experience is so important to them at that point that they party every available moment away from their schoolwork. So when you got the right song, you go, oh shit, like people don't agree on a lot. How many people Republican in here?
Be careful.
Let me get that motherfucker, man.
Now, they gonna jump him after this.
Hey, look.
He's trying to set him up. He's trying to line him up, man. Nah, it's all good. It's all good. We still love
him. Nah. Bro. I want y'all to pardon him. The brother made some money. He think he a Republican now. He said, wait a minute.
He looked around. Oh, shit.
He said, what the fuck? 50 set me up. We in InvestFest. You know, I think that, look, at points, the things that go on, like, they are conscious of finance now, Republicans.
This is true.
So, he done made some money. He said, fuck that.
What? One of the things we talk about, especially in this crowd, is access to capital, especially for black entrepreneurs, black business founders. In your space, money that comes from advertising. I wonder, do we face challenges the same way that entrepreneurs are facing when it comes to getting dollars from corporate?
Well, initially, when I get into a new venture, I finance it. Like, I usually use my money to start. And then as we get into new positions, I may take investment dollars. But like, if you look at Branson Cognac and Le Chemin Noir Champagne, I own the entire company. Like those, it's... That's completely black owned.
Well, I want to talk about that, right? Sire Spirits.
Yeah.
So, all right, Sire Spirits, completely black owned, like you said, liquor company. talk about that, because I know you had challenges before that, right? So talk about that whole situation.
Yeah, you run into, you have the experience with major corporations, like me, my particular experience with Beam Suntory, it was great in the beginning. It's great for us to work for them. It is not so cool when you start to own things. You see what I'm saying? So I made a lot of money with them too. Like, there's a point, they did a deal that mirrored what Puffy's deal with Diageo was for Ciroc. So he didn't have ownership of that at any point, but he was getting a lot of money, like almost like $60 million a year at one point. So when you see him go to De Leon is when you see him have some issues. And they're not. It gets bad. You know, and these people have really strong relationships. Don't think that the civil case doesn't turn into a criminal case faster because he's making that them uncomfortable. That's a big part of it. You know what I mean? Like, you look, when you go to the spirits businesses, it's not governed. They got a discus board that they created, right? If you got two companies that are $3 billion a year, and Beam Suntory and Diageo, the distribution level, it's very hard for you to get things to a point where you can do the numbers, the right numbers, the amount. So it's kind of like they incentivize the sales force by giving them box bonuses. And then when you sell a product, you get the bonuses off the boxes that's there. But you make that no matter what product you're selling. So if you sell Hennessy or Remy out the gate, they start to put downward pressure on the new companies. You see, I had a lawsuit with Remy. They said that because I had an oval-shaped bottle that there was some sort of product confusion, and I'm like, where? It's a big B in the middle of the fucking bottle. Like, you don't own the shape, the whole shape of the bottle. You know? And then we had one in there for a little while until it came, you know, I started saying shit like, 1738, I bet they had slaves. Then shit got uncomfortable and it was like, look, relax, okay? Can we make donations to existing foundations to make you feel happy? Yeah. Yeah, and it went away, but they do spend $63 million targeting African-American male consumers a year. Remy, specifically. You know, so that's why that would be uncomfortable, me making those statements, and it's risk versus reward. It doesn't make sense to fight the fight. So they said, let's just let that go. You know? But, you know, they ripped me off too, man. God damn it. They did. They ripped me off. Because one of the head guys is the head of sales for Beam Suntory. They set up a play and they were able to send a letterhead from Beam Suntory over to France and get the champagne company to commit to coming out and talking to them. And they have these things like it's a where you put agency fees. Like someone who contacted your grower or a person who's producing the cognac for you and made the deal for you. And they put agency fees on the product. To give you an example of the scheme that they put together, it's like, say you wanted to sell t-shirts and I go to China for you. And I tell the people in China, how much can you make the shirt for? And they tell me $4. And then I come back and I tell you, yo, they said $8. And then every time you send the check to the producer, they just put $4 on the side for them every time. So they siphoned off about $6 million from me in the very beginning. And then the legal fees has been almost a whole nother, almost $10 million. So I put like $70 million into Branson and Le Chemin de Wagon, as a company. This is for my son. This is how his spirits, like, later he can take this one, you know.
But you also went to Congress with Ben Crump. You went to Congress.
Yeah.
With Ben Crump, right? To advocate, what was that for?
Yeah, I remember the Black Caucus, and with Ben, we went out there and talked about it because they're not being policed. Like, at that point, the Discus Board tells them to pay a fine. How much does the fine mean when you're a $3 billion company? I just do what I want. And if you catch me, I just pay the fine. Doesn't matter. You still just do what you want. And then, you know, so they look into that particular category. This is why you don't see a whole lot of us owning the brands that we're consuming. But when I was pointing out, because I jumped around a little bit, I got a habit of doing that, right? When I said that my core audience was in college in 2003 and partying at every available moment, right? When they identified that they were in charge of them, like, I'm a grown woman. She decides you're going to have some of this, you're going to have some of this. Now look, when he's there and things go exactly the way they're supposed to do, and they connect the experience, what made people relax and enjoy themselves is the music itself. And they connect that. It's not finding a new audience, it's finding your core audience again. Because we do the same things that we did at that point a different way. Later in life, you have the drink that you would have at a nightclub in the privacies of your home. You might have wine when you're having something to eat. In success, you have a wine cellar or a bar in your house so you can invite the people that you're comfortable with over and have that drink instead of being at the nightclub with your kids. Now, if you are at the nightclub with your kids,
that's a whole nother category.
Teach your song. I mean, it's a different.
That's a whole nother category.
Some people make different choices. Like, look, again, this last tour, right? Look, this last tour, it was different. It was different from all my experiences touring because this time when I was like, I was performing and I looked out in the crowd and I see like really attractive woman. I said, damn baby, where's your mother? You are way too young for me. How old are you, 23? Yeah. That's how I felt. It was a little different that time.
You're super intentional about naming Sire Spirits. Recently watched your interview. You said you're not in a rush to be a billionaire. Anything you want, you can have. It's about him, which is important because we really haven't seen generational wealth. Mm-hmm. We've seen people get wealthy. We've never seen it being passed down. As you're going through it and learning lessons, and it seems like you're learning from other people's mistakes and correcting them, are you having him around the process and showing him some of these things now at an early age so that he can have a future trajectory that's way greater than you could have ever expected?
I'm trying not to overexpose him. You know, it's just September 1st is his birthday. He turned 12. Super innocent. Like, he really don't understand. Like, at me at 12, I was...
I'm about to say a lot different from you at 12.
I was...
A little different.
A lot different.
Circumstances are different.
Yeah, like... He grew up a lot different. Like, he ain't gonna be saying none of the shit I said in the markets. None of that. He look at you like this, what? For real? He don't even know his mother with Puffy. Hey, look.
Who? Whoa.
Hey, my life is a movie.
Oh,
allegedly.
Man. Well, okay. So, how do you deal with entitlement, right? Because that's something that, you know, I know I heard you speak on it a lot. And anybody that has reached any level of success, you have people around you that feel entitled to your success. And when they don't get what they want, then they lash out and it's a dysfunctional relationship. So what lessons have you learned over the course of life dealing with entitlement?
Well, I feel like there's no such thing as success without, when we're praying for it, we're not praying for jealousy, we're not praying for envy, and we're not praying for entitlement, and it comes with it. Those three things. And the jealousy is the easy part. You just kind of distance yourself from that person. The envious part, you can't really see it as much. Person could be around you and just feel like, I wish that was me. You know, and how bad is that if things are going well? You know, but the entitlement, I think it shows up. Like, we're going to have some confusion going on regardlessly. I think no matter what, the first time you give someone something from the kindness of your heart, they're surprised. The second time you give it to them, they go, thanks, man, I really appreciate that. The third time, they go, yo, I wish you would have gave me that last week. And the fourth time, damn, man, well, how long it took you to give me that? Why you wait so long to do that? You got it. And now it creates confusion, or you have problems in different areas. This is why, like a lot of the talent, when you see music artists, right, they go, when you ask them what happened in the experience, like why it's not going the way they would like it to go, they usually say the label. It was the label's fault, you know? And if the label's an individual, like it's a person, then it's my fault. It's that person's fault. But it's not the label's responsibility to sustain your value. It's on you as an individual. You know, and they're going to sell what has the highest probability to sell, and it doesn't matter to them whether it's you or the new thing that they just picked up, as long as it's continuing to sell. It's a business. So you watch that, though. They'll say it. That as far as entitlement is concerned, I wean off of people. I get off of people. Sometimes they spoil like milk. It just take a little while and then they'll spoil. An easy job is a hard job. You forget you're working. Right? You got some people that are blessed. They're so talented. They do it easy. I'm not that talented. Fuck that. I got to work to make this shit work. And this is why I'm not complacent. Because I've worked to make it work. Like, look, you look at Kobe Bryant's. His career. He'd be there training the most, practicing the most to perform the best. The other guys, they come in, he's like, I'm nice. He ain't in there all day. He just coming in with this shit, this gift he got. So it's a higher probability that guy fucks up because he could be distracted with everything else, everybody else's temperament, all of these things around him that can be an obstacle for his career. And Kobe is being occupied by practice, by working, you know? And for me, none of these things equal complete happiness. Business, if everything goes right for you in business, there'll be things that I have to get accustomed to the things that, like, this is the greatest example, right? I know I'm jumping around. Look. The greatest example, this is better though. Music artists, first music video, the first thing they do is rent a car to put in the video to convey lifestyle. Right? And cut, and the car goes back. But if that shit works, he's going to get a version of that car. If it's not that car, he's going to get the one that he feels like is the coolest one he could get. Right? And he has it. And then immediately, he becomes an inspiration in the environment because he made that happen. He made it from nothing. It's just the idea. Creatively, he came up with something that created the ability for him to have this car. Then in the environment, like the way I grew up, when you saw people have nice things, somebody was doing something they wasn't supposed to be doing. A relative or somebody this is in the 80s into the 90s. It was a different ability to get money out of the neighborhoods that existed at that point. It's not there so much no more. Now, their pieces is hitting. They're doing the scamming. They got to do it a different way, right? But when you would see those things, my grandfather, look, I just lost my grandfather.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. Condolences.
And he sacrificed the most for my entire family, for me, right? And he simplified things. So he would just go to work, come home, and just give my grandmother's check. I'd be like, God damn, you just gonna give her the whole check? And And I said, I'm never going to understand how you just gave her the whole check. And he's like, he said, well, you was a baby. You wouldn't understand nowhere. And he said, but when I gave your mama the check, it stopped her from looking at things that I couldn't give her. She said, now, the woman you with, is she the kind of woman that you would give everything? Because I would give your mama everything. I loved her so much. And it made me...
It's crazy.
And that made me look at things a little different. Because I was like, my grandma a pimp. Now, for everybody who clapped, all you ladies who clapped, I'd like you to raise your hand. Okay, now, men, look around. These people are dangerous.
Fifth, one of the greatest lines that, in my opinion, that you said is, I took quarter waters, put them in bottles for $2, and Coca-Cola went and bought it for billions. That's what's up.
Yeah.
Obviously, a great line, but what you did is you opened up the world of financial literacy for us.
Yeah.
That led to Shadi writing stories about it. That led to us having conversations about financial literacy. At the time, I was just like, damn, Fifth made a lot of money off that, but it was like, this is a way now to teach people through music about making money. That deal worked out pretty well.
Yeah, that one.
Pretty well. I wonder, has there been a deal that you haven't spoken about that has been as lucrative, as successful, that you haven't put in a song? Have there been deals like that that have come across since that time?
You know what? Well, I did pretty well with SK Energy. Mm. I partnered with the United Nations World Food Program, and we was able to provide a meal with every energy drink that we sold on that one. And that was, I think, promoting conscious capitalism is the way to solve our issues, because we got, look, 10% of business would alleviate all extreme poverty. You got to think of how much 10% of Google is worth. You think of how much 10% of what Bill Gates owns on all the farmland, right? So 10% of that, what would that be worth? And then if we was utilizing that, because it was, if that company was developed under that model, just because they thought people would embrace it faster if they knew it was that, then we would find the finances to solve a lot of the issues that we had going on. But, the vitamin one thing, that was, I didn't need the money. Like, when companies approach artists to be a part of the marketing, it's just, they've reached a financial level where they can commit that marketing, right? And it'll move the company to the next level, the notoriety and everything that connects to it. So they make the deal. But if you told them, you don't have to give me that money, that I'll take the equity on the back end when it sells, when the real money comes, they'll go, yeah. Because at that point, the equity that you have in it, like Vitamin Water, they had employees that they had provided stock options for. And working class folks live in the now. So if they say, wait, so that imaginary stock shit that you gave me that I can't keep count of because it's not going into my bank account, you saying you give me how much for that right now and I can move and Junior can have his own room and I can go get the car I want and everything right now? And they sold me pieces of it. They sold me pieces of it, the people that they already, after I had what was in the deal, I picked up a few pieces from people who had some of their shares. You know, so that was a really good deal.
But that's also financial literacy, because from what I heard, maybe you know more about this, but they had approached Ron Artest before and they offered him the same deal, but he didn't understand equity and he wanted money, and they didn't really, wasn't in a position to give him the money that he wanted, so he turned it down and you took the equity. But that's because he probably didn't have the understanding, like you said, of what equity is.
And just where he was at that point in his career. Like, you know, basketball, everything's the check. So they look at the last check they can. Like, when I did business with RBK, with G on the sneakers. I made over $80 million during that time period with Paul Fireman over there, right?
Well, then nobody claps for that. God damn. It's an everyday thing. Like, what?
But while I was there, the deal only took place because of LeBron. That's why I say, like, me and LeBron, I'll be like, we 03, baby.
Class of 03.
You don't even know why I feel like that. But when RBK lost, when they lost the bidding war for LeBron, because Nike ended up making a deal with him for $120 million, they had $80 million sitting there, and Paul Feinman decided to do lifestyle branding with myself, Jay-Z, and Daddy Yankee. And I just kept coming back for money. Every 3 months, I kept saying to him, look, I'm a high-risk investment. Yo, it's going good. I'm a high-risk investment. Yo, we are doing so good. How many shoes we sell? I'm a high-risk investment. And I kept leaving with the money. I was like, yo, you know, I just don't want you to be in a bad spot. You know, I might say the wrong thing and then everything just be fucked up. All right? Then I start telling them the stuff that my publicist told me, right? Because she told me two things you don't say. You don't say nothing about religion, and you stay away from politics, right? Because no matter what your beliefs are, someone passionately disagrees with you, right? So you just stay away from that. And then if you don't believe she was correct, all you have to do is ask Kanye. That's what he did.
Both.
Went to politics.
I think he did both. I think he did both.
Yeah. Went to politics, and then he went and said some shit about the...
A couple people. Easy.
Now you notice I didn't say that shit, right?
Yeah. Your publicist backstage.
Yeah.
Man, when we had dinner with you, you said something that was profound. You said, I don't want a problem, but if there's a problem, there's no problem.
Yeah, yeah.
People look at you as a bully.
I don't know. You know, they miss... The person irritating me.
It's perspective.
They didn't see that part.
Perspective.
They see my response to the person, and I look and I go, what the? Oh, you think I ain't got time to fuck with you? A lot of it doesn't make sense. A lot of it doesn't, there's no gratification out of it. I just like, sometimes people want attention. I say, hey, well, here's more attention than you want. So now you feel so fucking uncomfortable that you wish you didn't do that, don't you? And it's just a concept. It's a personality. It's a character flaw that I have. And look, don't think you weren't a part of how it developed, because you were participating on social media and gave me these habits.
Stay full.
You know, you got people, if someone's across the street, right, they look at you and they just don't like you. For whatever reasons, right? We at InvestFest, people got on their good clothes and shit. I seen Steve Harvey backstage. He had on a gator jacket. Gator shoes. I said, where you was going, nigga? I felt so underdressed that I gotta embarrass him. Fuck that. He didn't have to do that to me. Are y'all enjoying yourself? As a DJ? Are you not entertained?
Viv. We touched on Shreveport, but I think people overlooked what really happened, right? You had humor, right? You had harmony, but you had our community down there to celebrate each other, to find a new demographic, a new region. Talk about what goes into preparing for something like that. Obviously, we've done InvestFest. Everybody's here. Shout out to everybody's here, but yeah, this is a lot of work, man. Talk about that.
Look, to start, what sent me to Shreveport is the tax incentive, right? The tax incentive around filming allows me to do things that I wouldn't be able to do in other territories, right? And they had the tax incentive there. They pulled it, and people migrated to Atlanta. Some of them here from Shreveport.
That, like two people back there.
Yeah.
Two more of them.
And other people don't want you to know they from Shreveport. No. But... they migrated to other territories where they could work in the same field and do what they was doing because they had the film in there. And then when I get out there, I see the facilities, it is like I had to put 20 something million dollars into the studio for it to work. So if you don't have the...
It's a lot of capital.
But if you don't have the finances to invest in the studio and then the actual projects that are up that allow you to bring new projects into the in and out the building, then it wouldn't make sense for you to go out to Shreveport, right? I just filmed in Bulgaria, man. I filmed wherever the movie's being made. This is why Avi and them moved out there, because they were provided tax and the government finances to allow them to do different things. And then the downtown, when I went downtown, I was like, oh shit. Like, it looked like the vampires ate the people. I'm like, where's everybody at? It's fly, because the city is still a nice city. Like, it doesn't look old at all. But it just was no people. And I'm like, I will have this place crawling with people. See, because when you think about, like, Burning Man, they in the desert. And went to the desert to have a music experience. So I'm like, it's just entertainment that will bring the people. And in order to, I made some purchases downtown because got to revitalize some things that are down there. And then you're going to see Shreveport going to be a hot spot after I get rolling, because I'll have film projects out there. So you have multiple cast members and people out and about, but I got to get everything else active down there. So working Human Harmony was my first example. It is a proven model now that it works, yeah. You know? And
yeah, I bring it up just because obviously there was some criticism from the Shreveport resident, but what was overlooked was the jobs that you're bringing.
Yeah.
The hospitality is now going.
Yeah, it's booming.
The exposure for the city. All these things that money can't buy that you are bringing. So I wanted to give you your flowers, and I think everybody here should give you your flowers for that.
Thank you. I mean, it's cool. It's exciting to be able to do that. Like, and I just wanted to, I was really using my relationships to bring everyone out. So Dave Chappelle showed up for me, Cat Williams, so many cool comedians and stuff like that. You could tell I really like comedy. Like, I keep standing up and shit. Right? But you can tell I like it. Like, I think it's healthy for us. It makes you feel better. Like, if you laugh and you enjoy yourself, and I think we live longer when we spend our time that way. You know? So I titled the fest Human Harmony, and then I had Soul For Real. Dun, 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 dun. That was the old school. See, I'm way smoother in the shower. I'm way smoother than I am in real life when I'm in the shower. I got R&B music playing, monotone. You know, ooh, say what, say what, say what. You know that. I can hit that. I can't hit the Key Sweat backstage.
That's a fact.
Now, Key Sweat is a crying. He'd be crying on that. He'd be crying on them records. Security, don't let him come up here. I know Keith is backstage. He gonna be backstage waiting for me.
Yo, make some noise for the legendary 50 Cent. But DJ, before we do that, since we got Fifth here, man, Fifth was a major inspiration for us. As he said, we the demographic that actually listened to his album, Get Rich.
Hold on, Shotty. I need everybody to their feet. I need everybody to your feet. Fifth, you want to hear this? Everybody to your feet.
Yeah, this is impromptu. We ain't know he was going to do it when he was on stage, but it's only right, man. He's a major inspiration as far as Get Rich or Die Trying. It. That really laid the blueprint for a lot of people that was hustlers that really wanted to just figure out their situation and better their situation. And then also shout out to our partner, Ian Dunlap. Where's Ian at? Another major inspiration and motivation for us for everything that we've been doing as far as, you know,
pillar when it comes to the Tower of Earn Your Leisure. So, you know, for a long time, people been reading books about finance, and, you know, these books, they didn't listen to Get Rich or Die Trying. So we created the new book for you. It's called You Deserve to Be Rich. Now you have our first piece of literature that will be in store soon. You can pre-order it now.
Yeah.
Put the barcode up. You Deserve to Be Rich. Get that.
That's a fact.
That's your Christmas present.